buckle them up, but come on now. You're rocking with the number one MC. What you got, then you got me too. So come on now, you're rocking with the number one MC. Now gotta get tough, buckle them up, but come on now. You're rocking with the number one MC. What you got, then you got me too. So come on now, you're rocking with the number one MC.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio station, or radio program anyway, that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you along tonight, everybody. We are back and we are finished with the Dale Hawerchuk tribute. I hope you picked that up last week. If you didn't listen to it last week, please go back and listen to it. A lot of work went into that in terms of getting some permission from big network stations, and certainly a lot of highlights that went back and found, but Dale Hawerchuk had a huge, huge impact on this city and certainly the Winnipeg Jets in the 1980s, maybe our first legitimate NHL superstar, at least until a guy named Solani came along. But Dale Hawerchuk was a great guy, and certainly if you can get back and listen to that one last week, do that. Tonight, though, we move forward. We take a step forward because there's still some playoffs going on, still some fun going on, and we haven't really checked in with this guy for a while, although his team is doing all sorts of great things. We're going to bring in our resident New York Islanders expert, the man who knows everything that there is to know, at least we believe it anyway, about the New York Islanders. John, how are you? How's everything going in your neck of the woods there, sir?
Good evening, sir. It's great here. It's good. Well, considering we are, what, 10 minutes, 15 minutes removed from a very spirited overtime loss, but things are good. Things are hot and sticky here, but things are good.
That's okay then. As you may be well aware, folks, that means that we are recording this on a Wednesday. Tomorrow, which would be Thursday, Game 3 will go at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. in Winnipeg time, if you want to catch a Game 3 between the Islanders and the Flyers. I thought the game was entertaining. I mean, obviously, didn't get off to the same way that I think we've been used to seeing Islander games start anyway, with the three quick goals by the Flyers. But overall, pretty impressive so far by the Islanders in terms of their run here in the playoffs.
Yeah, this is what happens when you get one of your best defensemen back, when you're rested, and you have Barry Trotz, who is dictating the mojo. Also, with what happens when you have a team of ping pong enthusiasts. So, you know, anything to keep the spirits light, but the mind focused. I really have to say, this game felt the opposite of a couple of their last games. Instead of a dominant first, a sleepwalking first, they were what they've been doing to teams, shutting it down in the neutral zone, playing team full system-wide defense, clogging the passing lanes. They were having it done to them. They didn't. It was like the Flyers went, "Oh, we have to do that. Oh, wait, we've been doing that. That's how we beat Montreal." But then, instead of folding even further, they came back. Their second and third were the opposite of their last second and thirds. Or at least their second was the opposite of pretty much every second period. Well, yeah. Since game one against Florida. But
that's true, yeah.
This is what happens when you have a talented team who's then handed over to a competent adult in Barry Trotz. Doug Waite's a phenomenal human being from all accounts.
Yeah,
he's off collecting a paycheck until his contract expires, and I think he's somewhere close to where his oldest is going to college. I think maybe I coaching junior, something like that. But you know, peace be with him. But you know what? He was a great guy, but terrible coach. Sorry.
I don't, you're not going to get any argument from me. I mean, comparatively, I mean, we all know what Barry Trotz did in Washington and then what he did to Washington this year when it came to shutting them down. I look at the way that this game started, though, and kind of felt like you said, not the way they've certainly been starting in these playoffs, but kind of felt, and I hate to put it this way, kind of felt Doug Waite-ish. I mean, it seemed like they were waiting for somebody to sort of just come out and take control. And by the time somebody went, you know what, enough's enough, they're down 3-0.
Mm-hmm. And you're relying too much on your goaltender, who Barry Trotz is not going to tell you who his goaltender is when they're on the ice. He's not going to tell you the goalie's name after the first period started, because that's how he operates. But I saw some chatter about starting Grice, especially when you're going into a back-to-back in this bizarre playoff landscape. I don't think that was what you were saying about waiting around, waiting for someone to do something. Yes, he let up two goals and two shots. Yes, he let up three on, 15?
I think so,
because the first period was something, it was bad. But I don't entirely hold that first period against Varlamov.
No.
But when Grice came in, he played behind the same team. He's fresh. He could have been rusty. You have Thomas Grice. Seeing the two goals and two shots, I can understand the desirement to start Grice. But outside of two shots, Varlamov looked okay.
I think the first shot that Hayes took, the one in off the post, it's in off the post, right? I mean, that's the thing, is that, yeah, it's a good shot. I'll give Hayes credit for finding the post and getting it to the back of the net. The second one, okay, I get it. Like, that one, you're kind of going, okay, man, what are you doing here? The Couturier goal, though, I mean, and again, and I won't put this on Varlamov. I mean, we were laughing about it during the game as we were talking back and forth. Like, Nick Leddy's out there for pleasure skate night and legitimately had Sean Couturier skate right through him. Didn't even go around him, went through him and beat Varlamov across the goal mouth there. And I go, if you're going to blame the goalie here, Nick Leddy needs to get shot as well, because, I mean, he legitimately stood there like he wasn't even there. Like, I mean, that was pylon type hockey from Nick Leddy, and I go, there's no way that you can allow that in the playoffs. You either got to kill the man or you got to take the puck, and you didn't either.
And he screened his own goalie the entire way in.
Right, exactly.
He was the penguin my kids used when we went pleasure skating back in January. I mean, I missed it the first time, but when I saw it, it was like, Nick Leddy is literally just doing your standard, I'm learning how to skate, go backwards skating drill. And the nice, now if Barry gets upset to the point where he wants to make a change on D, he has Johnny Boychuk healthy. He has Noah Dobson, young and inexperienced, but he has him. And I believe, if I read this correctly, or my memory serves, Sebastian Aho is in Toronto. Likely, he's got three defensemen of varying capabilities. Now, we're not going to say that Johnny Boychuk is, I mean, he's rested, he's healthy, the eye is okay, but he still has his limitations, even though he hasn't been playing contact hockey. I don't know. Part of me says put in Aho. They bandied that guy. That guy has seen more of I-95 in Connecticut because of the call-ups from he would get called up from Bridgeport. He'd barely make it over the line into New York State, and they go, yeah, you know what? We were kidding. Go home. And they did that to him like four times in a week at one point. Give the man a shot.
I don't disagree with you on that. I think that both Aho, I think that one, Boychuk's physicality would have made a difference there compared to what Leddy did. I don't know if Aho and Dobson have the same. I know they have a good skill set. I don't know if they play the body the same, but I think that, again, you're right. I mean, if Nick Leddy is, going to play like that, don't play.
Thomas Hickey. Thomas Hickey's in Toronto,
Thomas
too.
Thomas Hickey's there as well.
So that's four defensemen who are doing nothing.
Yeah.
Except being not bruised and battered and embarrassing themselves. That we know publicly. We don't know what's happening in the bubble.
No, I mean, those ping pong tournaments can get a little crazy, so who knows?
Exactly.
But I mean, I look at that and I go, okay, you know what? Bad first period. Rally back. I mean, Anders Lee scored the first goal, which is fine. Beauvillier had a great goal with that second goal.
It's beautiful.
And then Pageau, I mean, despite everybody calling for the offside, which I think Martin Biron pointed out very accurately was not offside, I look at that goal and I go, that's just a great shot from a player who legitimately has been rolling since he arrived on the island. And I look at that, though, and I go, you don't have one line, you don't have two, you have three great scoring lines right now in terms of getting goals from down that lineup, and you have a very effective checking line. This is Barry Trotz hockey all over again.
There is, it absolutely is. And the best part about this, if you look at the goal distribution, it's really Lee, Beauvillier, and then, I mean, everyone but the goalies has a goal. Even my favorite little sidebar of this whole series of this whole series. Granted, it's two games so far, but they've talked about it like it's, you know, been a month already. You know who Andy Green scored his last playoff goal against 10 years ago? Oh,
I would have no idea in terms of, I'd have to look that up for sure.
Brian Boucher.
Oh, the guy standing beside him.
They have been giving him the business. The two different crew, because it wasn't, was it Forsland? You wouldn't, no, I don't think you would, I don't know if you get it, American NBC.
I do get it. I do watch it on, okay. On when I need a fix. Although I will say, and I mean, we can discuss this later if you want, Keith yeah. Jones is infinitely better already than Mike Milbury.
Yes. He's better than him. He's better without him.
Oh,
he's
yes.
Better.
I mean, all of that is true. But oh, I was just watching the one game today. I was like, I'll take Keith Jones 100 times out of 100 opportunities over Mike Milbury. Thanks.
Even on his boring days, yeah. But they, every crew, both in the studio and in Toronto, has been like, so does anyone know who Andy Green last scored against? Does anyone in the building know? And then you can hear the snorts, and there at one point there was an audible sigh out of Boucher, and he's disavowed his Philadelphia defenseman from 10 years ago. He's pretty much disavowed. Well, he also disavowed those jerseys that the Flyers were wearing.
Well, 10 years yeah, ago. Yeah.
But he had. They have been giving him the business, and I can't believe I'm older than Andy Green.
And if you look, I'm shocked. I know. He looks like he's about 40, and he's chugging along. And I just go that, like, shouldn't this guy have retired already?
Yeah, he looks like Willem Dafoe in The Lighthouse. My favorite one is actually he looked. Why is Michael Stipe in the NHL?
That's actually pretty good. I like that.
Yeah, it's been I don't know. But going back to the point. The goal distribution, everyone but a goaltender. I mean, if you put Chris, they have Chris Gibson as the number three.
Yeah.
Dress him as a defenseman, he'll get 2 points. Just how the system works, how everyone's touching the puck, how when they deploy the Anders Lee correctly, because I know that Barry is going to look at everything situationally. But when you just park, Anders Lee's what, 6'3"? Yeah. He was nearly a walk-on quarterback at Notre Dame. Did you ever read that article in The Athletic where he almost started for the football team because the other three quarterbacks were so either sick or injured one Saturday that they had to go to the hockey coach to ask if he could at least walk to the stadium?
That, I mean, I did not know that, but that is a fantastic fact, and I might have to dig that up now just to read it. So
he was ball Minnesota, and he's the captain of the New York Islanders. Like, this is the type of guy he is. But you park his big butt in very much a Dave Andrychuk type of way.
Right. Yeah.
Put him in there. Anders Lee has scored maybe 10 pretty goals in his life, and I'm going back to like Minnesota.
Right.
He scores you just throw it at his body and he will take the punishment and he'll deflect it in. It's night and Beauvillier everyone go worry about Barzal. That's great. You know what? You should worry about Barzal. Then Beauvillier comes out of nowhere and eats it alive on that second line with a brand new human being that is Brock. I almost said Brock Lesnar, Brock Nelson. There, you're right. There are three lines who can score goals in three distinct ways, and you have a defense who, look, if Ryan Pulock can finally get the shot off, he can put it out the back of the building. It's just absolutely beautiful to see, and I think Matt Martin's got two goals too. So it doesn't matter who's on the ice; there will be a shot on goal. I have there's one thing that's been bothering me for about 10 years with just how, I think it's about 10 years,
all right,
with how the league is going. It's the four forwards on the power play. I'm not, because I think what it started with, Kyle Okposo, we're going to go that far back, was a very much in the similar style of Anders Lee, getting put on the point. He has a good shot, but what is he goes to the front. Josh Bailey on the point, okay, fine, because he's creative, he's crafty, he's, at this point, he's the old guy in the room. Right. He knows how to work the system. I'm actually more okay with Taves, Letty, not so much Pulock, but Taves and Letty leading a rush on the power play and having the one defenseman low, because there's something about the way, outside of today, Letty could actually be faster than Barzal situationally. He's the best skater on the team. Now, Barzal is a great skater, but the defenseman aspect of the fact that he is a defenseman and he can skate like a forward, which is going to lead us, foreshadowing, into Mike Green later.
yes, yeah.
Having Letty low, having Taves is an excellent skater too. Having them low, even though their shots are not at the point, sits better with me than having Bailey or another forward on the point. And it's just annoyed me, and it's gotten to the point where that's how the league is operating.
Right.
With a four forward power play unit. And I also think it's sometimes they put the wrong forward in the slot, or you're putting too many artists instead of I'm about to get real hyperbolic here. You're putting too many artists instead of craftsmen in there. Like, put two Anders Lees as your forwards on that power play unit, so you have the bodies creating chaos, just putting butts in faces, instead of, oh, I'm going to take the perfect shot. No, you're not going to take the perfect shot, because the perfect shot doesn't exist. The perfect shot is a unicorn, and you're going to score power play goals the dirty way. And
see, I look at it, I look at what you're saying, and I actually agree with you, because I look at the way the Vancouver Canucks run their power play in a 1-3-1 in terms of the way they sort of stack the middle of the ice there. But what they do is they take that low player, the one that's in behind the net, and it's usually, I think it's Brock Besser and it's TJ Miller, two monstrous guys who go to the front of the net, but they shoot different hands. And what happens is as the puck gets rotated, those two guys are rotating as well. So they're obviously defensemen are losing track of where they're going, but you're getting the strong forehand shot on, depending on which side you're on, for the feed in the middle of the ice. And I think that the Islanders could really do that with a lot of the players they have. Take a Brock Nelson, take a, like you do, some Anders Lee, take a Clutterbuck and throw him out there if you want, but get the opposite-handed players playing the middle of that ice on the 1-3-1, and then have your big shot at the back, whether it's, you know, Pulock, whether it's any of those other guys, light it up and let the guys who can create, the Barzals, the Beauvilliers, the Pajots, the guys who can feed it into the middle, let them work the artistry, as you were saying, and let the guys who are just legitimately going to finish do their craft. Because I think that works out so well for the Canucks, but the talent level that I see with the Islanders is much, much greater.
I believe you, because I have been trying to stay up for the full Vancouver Vegas games, and yeah. it's just difficult.
I know, and I mean, I think, and they start on Thursday night. I think at like 9:45 or something, or whatever, yeah, Eastern, do. And it's like nobody's gonna see that game, man. Like, what are you doing?
No. Funny thing you say about that. If you're not gonna put, you know, a big oak tree in front, if you're not gonna put, you know, someone 6'3" like Anders Lee out in front, I mean these next words in the most positive way. Put that little rat bastard Pajot in front.
Great shot. I have no issues with that.
If calling him 5'9" is that's Vince McMahon level just chicanery. He's not. There's no way he's 5'9". There's no way he's one. Was he 192 or 172 the last time? No, he's 5'5", a 150. He gets his little nose in there. How many of his goals come from below the dots? How many times is he scoring a goal where his toe is still kind of close to to the circle? Get that little man, who's also 26, which bothers me. I know you and I are close to the same vintage. This is just bothering me. to no end. But get his, just get that little guy right in the front, and he, let him clean up the, you know, let him clean up the dust, let him clean up the scraps. Because if you're going to waste your time with Anders Lee, Brock Nelson, Matt Martin, I mean, he's, you know, he's another bigger guy. If you're going to waste your time on them, you know what? You're going to forget about Pagel. And again, if the Undertaker is 7 feet tall,
right,
Pagel is 5'9".
But I mean, you're right about Pagel. I mean, he gets to the open. He finds spots to shoot the puck, and he gets it off well every single time. Yeah, put him in the middle. Put him in the middle, and let him dance in the slot. Because you know, at some point, if that puck gets to him, it's on net. And if it's not on net, it's in the back of the net.
And he only wanted 5 years, $30 million.
Surprisingly, I'm not shocked that Melnick thought that was maybe a little bit too much.
You know what? More foreshadowing, which brings me to another former Ottawa senator who maybe shouldn't have gotten a different contract than he did, who's now playing in Vegas right now. That's actually that's a choose your own adventure, because there's like four ex-Ottawa senators.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah,
there's a pile of Ottawa senators out there right now that legitimately should have got better contracts. But, I mean, the ones in Vegas, certainly. So.
You know that I have a rant about those two goalies.
We'll get to that goalie, controversy coming up. The 5-on-5, I think the big thing for the Islanders right now, 5-on-5 dominance. So, I mean, I think that's the difference between them playing well, them winning, them not winning. Their goal differential at 5-on-5 is ridiculous. Again, Barry Trotz's hallmark in terms of the way that he coaches. But I think that matters because, again, I mean, obviously scoring goals at 5-on-5 is important. But to see the number of goals that the Islanders are scoring, not – and again, you can always improve on power play penalty kill. I get that. Special teams is always going to be a thing. But to have that kind of production at 5-on-5, I think, is going to be – maybe the key in watching the Islanders advance past the Philadelphia Flyers.
Barry's focused on this, over the last 20 years. Realistically, how much time are you spending on the power on special teams?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think it averages 8 minutes a game.
Exactly. Don't bother. Don't just, if you have some sorcery up your sleeve, if you have a crazy idea, okay, fine. You know, I'm going to use four defensemen. Oh, okay. Well, on which side? Crazy. It doesn't matter. I'm going to use four defensemen on the special teams, and we're going to see what happens. I mean, you can do something crazy like that, but in 5-on-5, you mark your territory, and you consistently put yourself in a position to transition, and have Barzal. Okay, I kind of want to use numbers because half of the damn forwards have a name starts with the letter B.
people might go, who is this guy? They're going to look up a roster now.
Yeah. So like it's Barzal, it's Beauvillier, it's Bailey, it's Brock, it's blah, 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 blah. No. There's always a getaway driver on every line. It's Barzal, it's Tito. And there we go. His Twitter handle is Tito Bovey, so we're going to call him Tito.
Yeah.
Tito's the getaway driver on the third line. It can be Pagel. I mean, it can be. The other night, it was a game five against the Capitals. It was Dell Coll. Dell Coll should not have been a first-round pick. And that's history. You can't change.
Right.
Because that's always going to dog him. If he was a third or fourth rounder, Dell Coll would be beloved amongst the fan base, but he was a first round pick, and he shouldn't have been. But you know what? He's serviceable, and he's got wheels. He's a lot like Michael Grabner. You know, maybe not the best, but if you need someone to break it out and at least get the puck away from where you don't want it, give it to Grabner, give it to Dell Coll. So,
right. Yep.
I can't say the same about the fourth line, but they're going to beat that. Well, they slog that out of their own zone.
But I mean, I look at the fourth line though, and I go, Cizikas is your safety valve out there. I mean, if something goes wrong, Casey Cizikas is flying back into the defensive zone. But I look at the way that those guys just wear down the opposing team, and I go, this is why they get 15 to 17 minutes some nights, because they're out there doing the heavy lifting, allowing the other guys to be able to freewheel around the ice. And to be honest, the Islanders might have the best fourth line in the NHL.
For like the eighth year in a row too, or however long they've been doing this. It's just, the fact that it's worked under three coaches, that's them. Let's pull out another cliche. Do you break up the Hanson brothers if you move them from, the 73 Flyers to the, 83 Oilers? No, you don't.
No, you keep them together, yeah.
You keep them together no matter where they are, because then, like you were saying, Cizikas is your pressure valve on any sort of breakout. But he's going to go in literally head first into whatever's going on. The only time Casey Cizikas has missed time in the last 12 months was, I think it was a game against Boston. I have a screenshot of, I had it on my phone. I think I was watching the game on my phone, and I have a screenshot. Cizikas took a, was it Chara? It was either Chara or McAvoy, slap shot from the point to the protective undercarriage.
Yeah, no, that's going to stop anybody in their tracks for sure, yeah.
He looked, so there's a shot of him on the bench. You could barely see the top of his head. He is tripled over in pain. There's one teammate checking to see if he's alive. There's another one about to vomit, and it's Tom Kuhnhackle on the far side who looks like he's about to light a cigarette going, man, I'm glad I'm not you. That's and then he missed like two games after that. That's the only time Casey Cizikas has like truly missed time that he took on a Boston Bruin defenseman. So
I mean that's the thing though, as I look at this and I just go like, again, and I mean I'll go back to Trotz hockey. I mean, you're right, that fourth line has been together and certainly been doing their job. I mean, I know Matt Martin left for a couple seasons because he got wooed away by some money in Toronto, but I look at that fourth line and I just go, you don't get that on very many other teams. You certainly don't get it on any of the teams that are remaining in the playoffs. And you kind of go, all right, maybe there's a chance that this fourth line can step up and score a goal tonight, but I don't even want them to. I just want to watch them just pound guys into the boards and laugh about it on the bench.
Mm-hmm. And it's not, they're not just beating people for the sake of beating people. When they make contact, one of them's actually cleaning up. I'm not the biggest fan of the stat about hits, because it's now the more recent comparison is, hey, this is this player's career long home run. Like it's a stat for meatheads to a degree, but there is an underlying. It only registers as a hit if it changes the possession. So if Matt Martin, who has been top five in hits, they're not, every hit is not leading to a goal, but every hit is leading to Cizikas and Clutterbuck getting it out of the zone and getting it out of danger. Whether or not they actually transition that hit into a goal or even a scoring chance, that puck is no longer on their defending blue line. It's there on the attacking blue line. So, but they've also been caught many times that one of their hits leads to a double transition and they get scored upon, because let's be honest, they're not turning, they're not winning foot races.
No. And I mean, but I look at it, like you said, though, I mean, if it's a turnover, it causes a turnover, causes a possession turnover. It counts as a hit, but I go, for that line, when you combine them together, obviously they're all, top 10 sort of, guys that throw hits out there, especially, I mean, Clutterbuck and Martin for sure.
Yeah.
You look at that and you go, for those guys to have that many recorded hits that have caused a turnover or caused a possession change, not only is it good for the Islanders in terms of, possession numbers and recoveries, but just the amount it wears down the opposing players. Like, those are legitimate hits at that point, because they've coughed up a puck. I hate to pick on Nick Leddy for this. Nick Leddy tapped, Couturier as he went by today and scored that goal. That's not a hit, man. Like, there's no way you're going to count that as a hit, even though he made contact. But I look at that and I go, not only are these guys causing possession changes, but now they're actually inflicting again. And like I said, it wears the opposing team down.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have your head on a swivel when those guys are on the ice, because they're coming for you. They want the puck, but they're coming for you, and they're willing to put their bodies, in harm's way to get it.
Yeah, and when you need to, you put Uncle Leo in the fourth line.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, look, and Uncle Leo, he's had his foibles are. I mean, some of them are legendary, and he's only been with the team for what, 2 years now? How many years? Are we 2 years post Tavares? Yeah. It's Komarov's been at the Isles for 2 years, and there's just sometimes you're like, you are Cosmo Kramer on the ice. Like, I'm waiting for him to like build, like around him are just levels of ice, but you can take Uncle Leo between the third and fourth lines. And tell him, I need you to do this. And, was it the beginning of the season? this is how strange the world is. It's this season that they are finishing that at the beginning, the Islanders had the 17-game point streak. The 15-game unbeaten streak.
Yeah.
That was this season. I swear that was before I had kids at this point. So, and my oldest is about to turn 6. So, that's how long this has been going on. And even then, there was a game, Komarov had a 2-goal game, and your mind just goes, why are you doing this? I don't believe you. I just cannot believe anything you're telling me. So there are pieces everywhere. And I think for tomorrow, Barry's going to go with the same line. So I get to break out the ride or die with Uncle Leo again.
Right. Yeah.
And it's going to be Varlamov, because technically he only played, what, 12 minutes?
15:09 officially. He was called it with 4:51 remaining.
Exactly. So he's technically rested.
Right.
And I
will say this. I think you're going to see a different Islanders team come out tomorrow. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a big change there as well. I don't think that this is going to sit well with Barry Trotz. So
this has been actually, for how bad it started, but how well it finished, and I know you only get – the W is the only thing that matters.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty good.
You know what? I mean, first, you never get a, as they say, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. I think that Barry, once he made the switch and the team went, oh, yeah, we got a hockey game today. I think you should be happy with, again, like you said, the way they finished. But certainly erase that first 15 minutes from the game, and it's an entirely different outcome at that point.
Yeah, and I tell you, I've had a much more entertaining and jovial trash talk with Flyer fan friends now than I could have had with Caps fan friends in the first round, because, oh, they're salty.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that.
No, they are just, it's the retconning of, for those of you who are comic book fans, changing the retroactive continuity, the retconning of Barry leaving, it was the right move, but right move, but wrong response. No, it was not the right move.
We all knew it was the wrong
move. Everyone, look, it was wrong. You don't, and maybe it had to happen because of what they were doing with Todd Reirden in the smoky back room, because this is DC. Everything's got smoke-filled backroom deal. But I thought it was Anaheim and Colorado, but Arizona was in the mix, or at least had requested to talk to both Reirden and I think Lane Lambert, although Lane Lambert's name is popping up again.
Yeah.
But Todd Reirden had at least upwards of 3 possible landing spots should he have left. But ownership knew they weren't gonna. They didn't have to pay him more if he has term, and they just make him coach unless it's in the contract. And it may be, maybe there's a bump up. I don't know how coaches' contracts work, but if you I would assume that if you go from assistant to interim, there's no, if you've negotiated it right or wrong, there may not be any change compensation wise. But if you have any sort of term left and you go from assistant to full-time head coach, there might be something. I'm probably wrong based on what happened to Barry, but It was a $300,000 difference. And Lou said, no, I'll give you 4.5. I'm not stupid. I may be crazy. I'm not stupid. Thank you, Barry. Thank you for taking my money. But I think that the more I think about it, and I haven't really, because I don't need to, because I don't care.
Right.
there was something I kind of thought they knew that they were going to let go of Barry, because it was, hey, you're an experienced coach, and 3 out of 4, you know, you're coming to your fourth year, you haven't done squat. We may have to let him go. Then he wins the cup, and he goes, oh, you have a clause in your contract. Look, I understand. We've all signed employment contracts in our lives. Mm-hmm. They can be torn up. It is not, like, this is not...
But the 18th
century France.
The thing that kills me about...
There's no guillotine involved in this.
I agree, but the thing that kills me is that... And again, I mean, I know, again, this is all water under the bridge now, but Ted Leonsis drops $300,000 on catering for the Washington Wizards. Like, $300,000 for a Stanley Cup winning coach should have been a no-brainer for him. And I don't understand... I mean, I understand why it happened, and I get that, well, you know, you got a contract, and we're going to hold you to the terms of it. No, you know what? The dude just brought you your very first Stanley Cup on a very good team. Maybe keep him around for another season or two. Maybe.
And then there's talk of, well, it was actually the term, not the dollars. Eat me. Eat me.
I'm sorry, you won how many Stanley Cups before this and how many since? Right, exactly.
You're 1-1. You're 1-1 for the cup. Now, that's actually a fairly decent, you know, that's your bet in 500 there. But yeah, you're 1-1, and it took, I'm bad at math, 30 years. 20 years. 30 years? 20 years. It took 20 years between the appearances. The only appearances. So,
a quote-unquote generational player playing right wing for you as well.
Left
wing for you.
Or, yeah, who's voting on that? Anyway, let's quickly talk about generational players.
Again, okay, before we go on, though, can I just say, and you can yes or no this, because it's just a fairly simple yes or no question. Pelech and Pulak, best defensive partners in the NHL right now, considering what they did to the entire first line of the Washington Capitals. Not saying that they're going to be that for the rest of their career right now. Are they the best defensive pairing in the playoffs?
I'm going to say yes, because of on paper who they shut down. In reality of who they shut down, you and I, some, you know, three of those games could have done that.
But sure,
if you look at the back of the hockey card for who they shut down, yes.
I mean, I'm looking at Barkov, I'm looking at Huberto, I'm looking at Ovechkin, I'm looking at Oshie, and I just go, these two guys who people often are listening to games may go, isn't that the same guy? Or are they just mispronouncing his name?
Oh, my God. Yes. Thank you, Gord Miller, for doing that. Gord Miller had the best. He's like, because no one knows about the Islander. Like, look, you go into Staten Island, you go into parts of Manhattan, people don't know the Islanders.
Right.
But there was one point the Islanders had Nielsen. They have Pelech, Pulak, and I'm blanking on, there was another like two guys, and I feel a true shame for not remembering this, but it was another like, how do you keep up with like when you have eight guys with really three names?
Right, yeah.
Which is like one letter off. And Gord Miller went boom, 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 right down the list. And everyone on Isles Twitter went, we have our new hero. We have our absolute new hero.
Yes, then.
Yeah. So, but on a return, if you don't mind me to segue, because I know you had already brought this up, Mike Green.
Yeah.
Mike Green is one of the best non-defensemen I've ever seen.
Yes.
He's a wing who probably had realized that he wasn't an excellent skater. Excellent skater, but he never had the true speed to be a wing, but he had a very small window of knowing exactly he understood defense, but that window went away quickly. but he was someone that who could get you, who could progress you through a game as long as you knew you could be on the power play. Because I don't think I ever saw him play on the kill, because his defensive awareness was not. His last, like, 2 years in D.C. were just painful. They're just, who are you? It's your hair. That's all people knew about you.
Well, yeah.
Your hair and you, and yeah, and the tattoos. I mean, he basically might as well just been in a band, which is funny because towards the end of his tenure, the intro video package was them playing as like some new metal band. And you're like, no, I actually believe that you are all musicians who accidentally play hockey, because you are an image. You are a marketed, you are a marketing dream. And that's how they played, because how many times did Mike Green, a Mike Green participating Washington Capitals come past the second round? I don't think Mike Green ever went past the second round in his career.
No, and I'll give Mike Green credit. I mean, you know, he had some good years and certainly put up a lot of big numbers. I mean, and don't get me wrong.
A lot of points.
There's a guy in Washington right now that's kind of doing the same thing by the name of Carlson. And I go, I get you're a defenseman, but you'd probably be better off just being a specialist at this point. And that's what Mike Green was. Mike Green was a specialist from the back end. Yeah, you're right. He probably could have been a winger. Didn't have the skating, maybe didn't have the speed to do so, but he's definitely a one of those sort of amazingly gifted players on one side of the coin while being entirely deficient on the other side.
Very much. And what really bothers me about Carlson is we share the same birthday. I'm older, but we're birthday buddies, and I'm like, why him? Come on. Sorry.
That's okay. That's all right.
Hey, we got George Foreman, so you know what? Hey,
I will say, I mean, yeah, Mike Green retiring is a little bit of a surprise, but I mean, all the best to him in the future.
He made the money,
right?
He had the money. He had a 15-year career.
Correct. Yeah.
And here we are pointing out his foibles. He played for 15 years.
Right.
And I mean, he was productive for a good chunk of that.
And he opted to stay home during the whole restart just for family reasons as well, which I respect. I mean, again, he's 34. He's got, he's got younger kids and a wife, and certainly there's some issues there that may have run into some problems if that's the thing. But like he said, the big things in his life, like his daughter crawling and laughing, teaching his son to fish, like those are the things that he really wants to sort of focus on. And I respect him for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude had 501 points with the Caps. I mean, he 37 points, 76 playoff games. Like, he was good, and certainly take nothing away from 31 goals for Washington in 2008, 2000. When's the last time a defender hit 30 goals? Like, we're talking about a guy who legitimately was good. And he's done now, which kind of sucks. But you look at that and you go, I'm happy to have said that I got to see guys like, I mean, again, and I'm aging myself here. I've got to see guys like Ray Bourque, Nick Lidstrom, Mike Green, John Carlson all play in my lifetime already. And I go, some of the best offensive defensemen that I've ever seen. Now, granted, the defensive side on some of those guys wasn't that great, but the guys who legitimately could put the puck, Paul Coffey, for example, couldn't play a lick of defense, but guy could score points like it was going out of style. I was lucky enough to see those guys play. And Mike Green's one of those guys that I think is a special player where I'm kind of glad I got to see him play.
And funny you mentioned that. It's the... They'd actually be, and probably depending on how you look at the underlying numbers, if they're scoring all the goals, isn't that the best defense? They have the puck the whole time.
In theory, yes. Like, I mean, that's the whole possession idea, right? So
yeah. So maybe Mike Green was the perfect defenseman because he had 30 goals. That he had 30 more goals in theory than there in front of him than were behind him.
Right. Exactly.
So. Again, it's a debate, but yes, peace be with him. Take your money, go be with your family, and no one's going to criticize that decision.
Enjoy life, Mike Green, exactly.
Yes.
Let's get to the ridiculous that happened this week, because there was some ridiculous, and we got about 10 minutes left to squeeze this in. We'll start with the most idiotic, which occurred apparently today, or at least last night anyway. Logan Couture taking a sucker punch from a guy for basically coming out as... a closeted Republican. Thoughts on Logan Couture's unfortunate accident at whatever event he was at last night?
Well, first off, he says his two comments of, well, I said this, but then I didn't say anything, but I still got punched. Then what did you do, Logan?
Exactly.
What did you do? But yeah.
I was going to say, there are significant details missing from this story, by the way.
Many. the word alcohol is missing from this story.
Likely,
But it's also, you know what? You and I have spoken. We know each other's politics, generally. But come on. Don't have a debate. Have an argument. You don't scream at each other.
No.
No, we're not. You punch.
Let me
be a little hypocritical. Yes, you can punch a Nazi in the face, but just because someone is, you know, registered with the other party, let's not punch them in the face.
And I mean, I'm okay with the fact that you want to have a political debate. I have no problem with Logan Couture talking about whatever politics he wants.
Of course.
But he doubled down on the fact that his dad was a cop. Well, yeah, his dad was a cop for 8 years. He actually was a firefighter that retired about 10 years ago. He was a firefighter for 30 years. Like, if you're gonna bring up something that happened legitimately 40 years ago where his dad was a cop for 8 years, only 8 years. Yeah. Oh, you're now treading water fairly quickly and fairly.
Yeah, you are.
Like, stop talking. Just admit that whatever happened was wrong. Whatever went down shouldn't have happened, and move on.
I'm just wondering when he's going to be on Tony D'Angelo's podcast.
We'll see. Cause Tony's got himself heck of a following there.
Oh God. Anyway. Yes. What's the next stupidity on the list?
The next stupidity goes to an Instagram account belonging to one Jonathan Marchessault, where a few fans took to his Instagram to let him know that he's a bit of a diver, and he went off and said some fairly repugnant stuff.
Well, he just proved he's a diver. Second, yeah, I think you had said it. Put your phone down. Because what was one of his posts around there was happy anniversary to my loving wife. I'm gonna go do this now. No, just pick one. You're either gonna have a do everything milk toast or don't do it at all.
Right.
Especially if this is what you're gonna be prone to. So, what he said. I mean,
you might hear that in the locker room or on the ice from a guy if he's particularly upset, but to do that on social media,
No, let's not. We know that even our favorite people in this game have said things that you make you want to take a shower a year later just by thinking about what they said. A wise man, a fool lets you know what he's thinking. I'm going to botch it, but it's a fool will tell you, a wise man won't let you know that he's a fool.
Right, yeah.
Just let's leave it at that.
I think that would be suitable. He came out today and owned it. He said sorry. I know that, you know, Couture a few hours ago also put an apology, basically saying that, you know, let bygones be bygones sort of thing. And I accept the Jonathan Marchessault one because it was legitimately to the point, like, hey, I said some stupid stuff and I shouldn't have, whereas Couture's was a little more wishy-washy. But yeah, like, come on, guys. Like, let's just let bygones be bygones. I mean, guys are going to have fans are going to have an opinion about everything you do. The least you want to do is drop a powder keg on it and light it on fire.
Yeah, and you're right. Marchessault said, yep, I said it. And you know what? He could, as long as you say those three words, I said it, that kind of gets you a little further down the road.
Right.
It does.
I agree.
Be honest.
Own it and apologize for it and move on. And I'm glad that they did that. I mean, the next one's a little harder because I feel like there's...
Are we staying in Las Vegas?
We're staying in Vegas with... I respect the fact that Alan Walsh is a good agent. I don't respect the fact that he's throwing his own players under the bus. The tweet that he put out showing a large sword with Pete DeBoer's name on it through the back of one Marc-Andre Fleury might have been the dumbest thing I've ever seen an agent do.
How Flower did not go walk into that press. You know what? I'm trying to put two thoughts because I'm chomping at the bit over this. How he didn't walk out into that press conference and said, I fired that blankety blankety blank. I know we're in two different countries. We have two different level, you know, our FCC and, you know, your governing body. How he didn't just annihilate, because his agent, Alan Walsh, works for Marc-Andre Fleury.
Correct.
Not the other way around.
Yep.
And Marc-Andre Fleury handled it as such a professional and such an adult. It made me sick because I wanted the bald scalp of Alan Walsh to accidentally fall out of Flower's pocket, like during that presser, and go, what was that squishy noise? Oh, it was just this. Yeah. You know, he flops it on the table.
Yeah, all good. But I took care of it. Don't worry.
It brought me, we were talking about this earlier. The goalies for Vegas have the dumbest representatives of the human race in their employ. Aside from Alan Walsh, because Alan Walsh is also Yaroslav Halak's agent.
Correct,
and he did the same thing when Gar Snow was dicking around. Sorry.
That's fair. No, that's...
Okay.
That's...
Yeah, he was... When Gar Snow was messing around with his three-goalie system and sent Halak down to Bridgeport and it just... not doing right by the veteran, which, I mean, I don't normally like to play that card, but Yaro, this was a contract year. Yaro's a professional, and Garth is not treating him as such. Walsh took to Twitter and said a lot of just middle school level stuff.
I get what Walsh said in terms of I fight for my players. This was not fighting for your player. This was legitimately driving the bus over top of them.
Yeah, and this was also going into business for yourself.
Right.
And it reminds me in the conversation of like whose lawyer, whose agent is who. Robin Lehner and his agent, because Robin Lehner is on his third team in 18 months.
Yeah.
Let's not go retroactive on here. It would be great to have Robin Lehner the person on this team, but I think output wise, especially with Mitch Korn as the goalie guru, you have Varlamov, Greist, and Lehner all pretty much on the same level, getting the same coaching, conditioning, getting the same, you know, workload. They're interchangeable pieces. But at the award ceremony last summer, Lehner came out and said, I know that my history is going to scare off teams, including the team that is currently my employer. I want a contract. I am willing to be the solid citizen, the good person. Everyone knows I've turned my personal life around and I'm applying it to my professional life. Lou Lamoriello offered a 2-year, $10 million contract. Leonard's agent said, no, I want more. And you, what? Whoa, I just said, I'm willing to prove my worth and take the fair contract that I'm given based on the market. And he goes, no, the agent went, I want like 5x5, 5x4. This is, you know, we're going to make a big PR move. And Robin Lehner signed a 1-year, $5 million contract with the Chicago Blackhawks. Turn around, Semyon Varlamov signs a 4-year, $5 million a year contract to the New York Islanders. I'm sorry, that's fair market value.
Right.
The term is different because of exactly what Robin Lehner said. Exactly what Robin Lehner said.
And I get that. Like, that's fair, like you said. So,
and now he gets traded in that bizarre, just, oh, Vegas has entered the trade and they walked away with Robin Lehner, giving up what, a 4th round pick, something just absurd, just to help Chicago and Nashville, Chicago and Ottawa, it was bizarre.
Yeah.
But Vegas walked away with an upgrade. You know, like, I don't know if Malcolm Subban's good or not, but Robin Lehner in the point in time was better. And Robin Lehner, now with both of these agents being fools publicly, is Robin Lehner going to be in Vegas? Is Marc-Andre Fleury going to be in Vegas? Is Carolina going to come in and trade for either sign one or trade the other? Because Carolina proved that they are one particular position away from being the most dangerous team in the East.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. So
agents are morons. Specifically these two.
This has just been a nightmare for PR for Vegas over the last couple of weeks here, but I guess we'll see.
And it's been the greatest bad PR because they're winning.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's what I mean. Like, we'll have to see how that affects going forward, because I mean, I don't care if Robin Lehner gives up, you know, 10 goals tomorrow. I don't think he's getting pulled. Like,
no.
Like, you did this to your own client, Alan. Like, deal with it now.
And the funny thing, you know what? And now that you say that, this could be funny. They're also playing Vancouver. This could be a Vancouver issue from, what, 5 years ago? Hey, we don't know if we're going to keep we got some issues with Luongo and Schneider.
Right,
not between them, just but what's going on.
Yep.
6 months later, we don't have Luongo or Schneider.
That could certainly happen, yeah. I could see that becoming a coming to a head and certainly being one of those things where both guys in the offseason are either traded or they leave. So we'll see what happens at that point, I guess. Before we leave, John, one last thing. Predictions for this series now that it's tied 1-1. What's the final count here in terms of what happens between the Islanders and the Flyers?
I'm going to go with the popular decision, Isles at 6. And I think it'll be – I think they'll play Boston. I'm not going to tell you what the final – I'm not even going to bother to predict that, but I think the Eastern final will be Islanders-Bruins, and that terrifies me more than anything else because I think the Bruins will – I want the Isles to win, but let's be honest. The Bruins do – to a man – do everything the Islanders do, except they're all 6 feet tall.
Right.
They're all 200 pounds. And they're literally Godzilla is their team captain. So.
Former Islander.
Yeah. Two old former Islanders on that team with a kid from Long Island in Charlie McAvoy. It's just, there are too many storylines. And then seeing them, Chara's last kick at the can, because he's 43, but will he retire? They're on there, you know, it'll be Chara's fourth cup final. Fourth cup final, you know, back-to-back cup finals for that friggin' team in that damn city. I mean, I'm from New England, but give me a break. Just give me a break. But if everything ends up Boston-Dallas, they could be one of the best. It may be as good as the 0-4 Calgary-Tampa.
That, I mean, I don't deny that. I think it could be extremely good, extremely entertaining. I like the fact there are a pile of the storylines, though. I think that makes it a little bit more interesting, but we'll have to see, because I think that, I mean, if, and again, I'm only going to say this because I think that there's something to be said about the way the Islanders are playing. If Barry Trotz can squeeze enough out of this Islander, I don't think, I mean, you're going to have to play hard. And certainly going to have to do a lot of things right because the Bruins just absolutely punish you for making mistakes. But Yaroslav Halak isn't much better than Carter Hart, I feel anyway. It's just that he has a very good team in front of him.
But the Islanders for the second year in a row are in the second round. And again, I was 11 to then 2016. From me seeing the Isles in the second round, and now it's almost like a guarantee. So I'm just going to enjoy that.
That right there is a Lou Lamoureux thing, isn't it? In terms of the way that he just wants, he just wins and wins and wins no matter where he goes. So
fantastic.
John, I'm going to wish you the best. Obviously, your kids didn't join us on the show here tonight, but they are always welcome. As you know, we enjoy having them on when they're running around and causing trouble. So. I want to wish you the best, though, and we'll have you on. If the Islanders go, keep going, and they make it to the Stanley Cup final, be expecting another call. We'll have you back on. We'll talk in Stanley Cup craziness on Long Island with you.
I'm not going anywhere.
All right. That sounds good, buddy. We will. We'll certainly talk to you soon then, buddy. Take it easy, eh?
Yes, sir. You too.
So there's our good pal, John, excited about the New York Islanders' chances in these playoffs. Going to be back next week, folks, with a fun interview with a woman you may not recognize. But she has quite the hockey career that she has and has now moved on to another pretty cool career, I think. So we'll be back next week with that, folks. Here is Skippy and Free Range Radio coming up after me. Stay tuned for that, everybody, here on 101.5 UMFM. I've got to get tough, buckle them up.